Stevie Wonder is the one artist, perhaps the only artist, who has a song for every occasion. And that's why I love Stevie. He's the GOAT. I love him. As I say all the time, I hate stepping on him, but the show must go on. This is talk radio, but we squeeze in as much music as we can, and never, ever enough time for Stevelyn Morris. Once again, only Stevie can give you a track for every single occasion in your life. Love you, Stevie. I'm Tavis Smiley. What an amazing hour. What an amazing hour with Alice Randall. I don't have a language. I do not have a language to describe what that conversation just meant to me. I hope you enjoyed it just half as much as I did. I'm delighted to close in this final hour today with two conversations on the B side of this hour. The historical significance of black doulas in bringing joy to childbirth. Sophia Monroe will explain the difference, which I just learned preparing for this conversation, the difference between a midwife and a doula on the backside of this hour. But we commence this hour as we continue our celebration of Black Maternal Health Week in conversation with Heather Clark, president of the American College of Nurse Midwives, about the history of black midwifery in the U.S. and the ongoing, sadly, the ongoing disparities in black maternal health, hence Black Maternal Health Week. Heather Clark, good to have you on. How are you today?
So wonderful, and thank you for playing Stevie.
you're welcome. I love when the guests love the music, but it's hard not to love Stevie. So it's all good. You are more than welcome to hear a little Stevie on this program anytime we can squeeze it in. Let me just start at the outset by asking you to tell me a bit more about the history of black midwifery in this country.
Well, you know, black midwifery started in this country as the women who were captured were on the way to this country. They attended to other women, other pregnant women, and birth on the slave ship. Mm. They arrived in 1619 on the first slave ship. And they were confined, as you know, to living in slave quarters and plantations. And there they took care of other enslaved women who were pregnant or given birth, as well as the master's wives and women. So they were the main source of health care. They also attended to children and people who were dying. So they were often the first people called for any problems.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because it is not often the case, and we have occasion from time to time, of course, to talk about slavery and segregation in this country, and yet when we have these conversations, it is not often the case that we think about the fact that even before they arrived on these shores, Maya Angelou, who I referenced earlier in today's program, wrote in her brilliant poem On the Pulse of Mourning, which she delivered at the inauguration of Bill Clinton, that we were stolen, bought, and sold into slavery, arriving on a nightmare, praying for a dream. I love that. That's Maya Angelou in that brilliant poem. And when we think about that moment and that middle passage and the millions of our ancestors who did not survive and make it to these shores, of course, being brought against their will, we don't often think about the fact they were babies that were actually born on those slave ships, Heather Clark.
They were indeed. Can you imagine being in labor and someone trying to attend you while you were tied up?
Mm. Yeah, not just tied up, but chained up to the to the wall in that ship, as it were. And yet, those are the conditions that these African women, our ancestors, had to give birth. Hard to imagine, hard to even process. And so, when Heather Clark said that, my heart just dropped for a second. Just thinking about what it must have been like. Childbirth ain't easy for nobody. But imagine trying to birth a baby under those circumstances on the high seas while you're chained to the wall on a slave ship. I'm going to pause there for a second, let y'all just think about that part, as we say, when we come forward, more of our conversation during Black Maternal Health Week with the president of the American College of Nurse Midwives, Heather Clark, on Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Ready to re-examine your assumptions and expand your inventory of ideas? More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
More of Heather Clark coming your way right now. She's president of the American College of Nurse Midwives. We started this conversation moments ago with her telling us a bit about the backstory, the history of black midwifery in this country. I wonder if I can get you to juxtapose black midwifery then and black midwifery now.
Well, sure. Let me back up a little bit and say these women, we call them grand midwives, mm-hmm. because they practice with no tools other than their hands and their ears, which they used to listen to the babies through the mother's abdomen. Mm-hmm. And they had a deep dependence on God. They believed their work was a calling. Maud Collin, one of the famous Tuskegee graduates, said when she was concerned, she went into the back room and prayed to God. And I know many midwives who do the same thing even today. In comparison to midwives today, most of us go through some kind of formal training. Back then, they were apprentices. They worked often for years with a more senior midwife, and that's how they learned their skill. And they also maintain knowledge like herbs and roots and dependency on their environment, on their community, I'm sorry. Today, many of us go through some formal training, even the traditional midwives of today. And many of us also go through some national certifications. So, for example, in the American College of Nurse Midwives, which I represent, most of our midwives go through at least 4 years of graduate training, and then we have to take a national certification exam. And most of us end up working in hospitals. The grand midwives worked in people's homes. Mm-hmm. They cared for them, lived, and they involved all the community. In hospitals, we're a little bit more removed from the community. And oftentimes, we have to follow some of the protocols and practices in the hospital, even though we try very much to maintain a natural environment and include the family, but that's not always possible.
Yeah. Before I come forward, let me go back one more again. I love the way you put this. Back in the day, they didn't have any tools. They didn't have all the technology available to them that we have available to us today. But as you put it, they had their hands and their ears. The hands part I get, but tell me more about how they use so brilliantly, so excellently, their ears.
Well, today we have all kinds of fancy equipment. We have ultrasounds, we have Dopplers, the little gadgets that we put on mothers' abdomens, and everyone in the room hears the heartbeat. The only thing they could do when the baby grew large enough was to put their ear to the back. So with their hands, they figured out where the baby's back was, and then they put the ear to the back to listen to the heartbeat, and you had to listen really carefully to hear that tick-tock sound. Amazing.
What does that say to you? I'm just arrested as you share this story. What does that say to you then about the brilliance, the genius of these midwives back then?
Well, as I said, they depended a lot on God. And they used what they had. Mm-hmm. They used what they had. And in getting down close to that mama's abdomen and listening to the baby, that's how intimately connected they were to that woman. That's how much of a relationship they developed to that woman. And that is an issue that is missing, I feel, in today's obstetrics and even midwifery. I tell my students all the time, midwifery is about relationships, relationship with yourself and the people you care for. But when you have all this technology in between you and that client, and maybe 10 minutes to spend time with her in a prenatal room, it's a lot harder to establish a relationship and really get to know the things that concern her and the things that really put her at ease that can make a big difference in the outcome of her birth.
Yeah, tell me just a little bit more about how so many of these women back in the day felt that their vocation, their avocation, was in fact a calling of God.
Well, birth was seen and death were seen as something very spiritual, very mystical, mm-hmm. and only a few people that were able to sit with people when they were coming in, as well as when they were going out. And so the midwife became that person to sit with women and to assist that spirit that was coming in. A lot of the traditional African, and even today, believe that it's our ancestors that are being reborn. And so it was an honor to welcome that ancestor and to work with the family during the pregnancy to even help to identify who was that ancestor coming in, and then to support the ancestor as they left to go back to the other side. And that wasn't seen as something human. It was seen as something godly, and therefore they were called by God to assist in that process.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned hospitals a moment ago, and that these black midwives today perform and perfect their craft in homes and in hospitals. We are in the midst, as you know, of Black Maternal Health Week. I've already talked to a number of notables, notable black women around these various topics that we're discussing in Black Maternal Health Week. And I've heard a number of stories, indeed, from black female physicians who themselves don't trust hospitals. They have had babies at home themselves. Talk to me about what you see and what your take is on hospitals versus homes when it comes to black women having babies.
Oh, that's loaded. I had my two children at home after being a midwife for 11 years because I was fearful to go to the hospital. Mm. And I didn't want the hospital to touch my babies. Hospitals are slowly getting better, but they can be a very cold, uncaring place. You know, hospitals began because foreign-trained physicians came back to the United States and after learning obstetrics, mostly in Europe, and it was seen as a profession that could make them a lot of money. Everybody was having babies, right? Mm-hmm. And they could do away with these untrained, they named unsanitary women. And so hospitals began and they offered free or limited pay to attract people into the hospitals. Keep in mind, they were segregated until 1968. Mm-hmm. And then the maternal mortality rate went up. And it went up because physicians were doing surgery and taking care of cadavers and maybe not washing their hands and going to attend a birth. And there was a higher degree of childbirth fever. Fortunately, we have moved away from those practices and we have more sterile procedures in hospitals. But when I started back in the 70s, people weren't allowed to have support people who they loved and knew in labor with them. That has changed, thank goodness, a lot because of midwives advocating for clients to have patients. But even so, in many hospitals, people don't have rights. They're not listened to. Hospital staff and doctors walk in the room without introducing themselves. They insert their fingers in vaginas without asking permission. They touch people in ways that would be considered abusive without asking permission. So people are not empowered. And birth is a vulnerable space physically as well as psychologically. And if you feel abused, if you feel disempowered, if you feel less than, it's going to impact the way you give birth. It's going to impact the way you can bond and feed with your baby. Mm-hmm. And it's even going to impact your sexual relationship with your partner.
No, all that makes sense to me. It makes perfect sense, and you broke it down brilliantly. Let me pivot just ever so gently, and I'll tell you why in just a second. I am curious to your point about getting into this field, this profession back in the 70s. Why did Heather Clark, why did you choose this profession?
Oh, God. I was in college towards the end of the Vietnam War, the end of the Panther Movement, and I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. I just came from the United Kingdom, and I really wanted to go to the London School of Economics and major in political science. But I went to nursing because I figured I could graduate and get a job, right? That was the goal, graduate, get a job. And I found myself working in the labor and birth area. I don't use the term delivery because I find that disempowering. And there was a midwife there, and I'm going to say her name, Betty Carrington, who, unlike any of the doctors in the labor and birthing unit, took time to listen to women, to really offer them a supportive hand. And I saw the way she interacted with clients, one particular client. It was like magic. That woman was so full of fear. And when Betty spoke to her through the bed rail, her whole face relaxed and she was able to calm down and breathe and go ahead. And, well, she had to have a C-section, but she went and gave birth. I thought it was magic and I wanted to do it. And that led me to midwifery.
I'll tell you in a second why I asked that question. Once I squeeze in another question, because what you said now makes me want to offer or ask a follow-up, which I have to ask because the audience heard the same thing I heard. And I'm always fascinated by persons who are in professions who give me a different way to think about the language that I use, the language we all use. I have never heard in my entire career, which is 30 plus years now, I've never heard anyone critique the use of the word delivery. We use that word all the time when we talk about having babies, but I've never heard a critique of the word delivery. I thought I heard you say you don't use that word because for you it is disempowering. So now you got my attention. Tell me more about that, please.
It is disempowering. I consider birth as a dance between the mother and the baby. That baby has to negotiate the woman's pelvis, right? The outer part of the pelvis, top part, and corkscrew its way through the pelvis to where it eventually extends its head and it's born. And the mother has to relax her pelvis enough so that her muscles are relaxed so the baby can negotiate its way through the pelvis. That's a beautiful dance that no one has the power to intervene because this all takes place deep inside the mother's pelvis. It's a birth. So to say that you deliver is completely disempowering the work that the mother and the baby do together to be able to get to the place where they're holding each other. And that builds the environment for the baby to then latch on and breastfeed and take nourishment in that is superior to formula because of the way it gives the baby psychological comfort and also helps the development of its brain and intelligence. So it's a dance. It's not delivery.
I have never, ever considered that in my entire life. And this is why I say all the time here at the Clark, this audience hears almost every day. I always leave this studio smarter. I'm going to walk out of here in about 33 minutes, Lord willing, when this program is over today. And I always leave this studio smarter than when I came in because the audience, the audience of people that I get a chance to talk to every day, always give me a different way of seeing the world, a different prism to see the world, and a different way of processing language and concepts and ideas. I say all the time that at my best, I hope this program at my best is challenging folk to re-examine the assumptions they hold, to expand their inventory of ideas, and maybe even to rethink the language that we, all of us, use. And so I welcome that description. Never heard it before, but you can best believe I'll be thinking about that the rest of my life when that word delivery tries to jump out of my mouth when I'm talking about babies being birthed. I take your point loud and clear. Let me close on this note. I got 2 minutes left. Speaking of the history of black midwifery in this country, it was just in 2022, as I recall, that the American College of Nurse Midwives announced its first black president. You know that quite well. Talk to me about very quickly about the ways in which black women have been received in this profession over the years.
So from the perspective of the American College of Nurse Midwives, you're right, I am the first black president. But when I went to midwifery school, for example, some 44 years ago, I was the only black woman in my program. Mm-hmm. And I went through a lot of, I would say, racism.
Yeah.
From my other students, who I found out they had study groups going on and I wasn't a part of any of them. Mm. And unfortunately, from faculty. So in the last, I would say, 8 to 10 years, ACNM has made an effort to increase the number of black midwives. There are less than 7-8% of black midwives in our organization. And you know, the percentage of black midwives, black people in the population,
sure,
is 14%.
Sure.
So we've made, in terms of scholarships, we've developed a racism in midwifery task force geared to faculty who are, to help them become more mindful of the language they use,
yeah,
that disempowers the students. Yeah.
Yep. No,
so,
Finish. I got 30 seconds. Finish your last point. I'm sorry. I didn't want to cut you off. 30 seconds.
So we're aware of the racism within this organization, which has been going on really since the organization began,
right,
and the way in which it impacts maternal health outcomes for black women.
But, well, you navigated your way through all that racism and through those murky waters to become the president, the first black president of the American College of Nurse Midwives, and you are extending the legacy of all these black midwives down through history. Thank you for the conversation. Thank you for your work and witness. Good to have you on this program. Heather Clark, all the best to you.
Thank you so much.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.
What's your quarrel with the world?
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.